Hi, welcome to East to West WLS, the podcast, where we support the bariatric community with humor, humility, and honesty. I'm April, and I'm the West.
And I'm Jason, and I'm the East.
Today, if you are watching this podcast, you will notice that we have three amazing women joining us today. Miss Natalie, who is, of course, East to West. And then we have the privilege of welcoming Laura Grabo and Jana Wolf to talk about cravings. Hi, ladies.
Hello.
We are so excited that we can all be together because this is the first time that we have brought experts from two fields together to have one conversation about a topic that gives us the spooks after bariatric surgery, and that is cravings.
Have you ever wished you had a dedicated bariatric buddy to help guide you along your weight loss journey? Well, guess what? You can find that person. Patient Partner connects pre-op bariatric patients to vetted post-op bariatric patients who help and encourage each other along the way. Patient Partner helps you feel more empowered, prepared, and supported through your surgery by connecting you to a community of recovered patients so you can move forward with confidence. Click the link in our Instagram bio to learn how you can take advantage of this free service. And if you don't follow us on Instagram, you are missing out. Just head there and search for East, the number 2, West underscore WLS, and follow Patient Partner at Patient underscore Partner.
We all know that cravings can be a physical signal that we're missing something. It can also be an emotional signal that we are missing something. And we really, as bariatric patients, have to become our own scientists, and we have to decipher what each craving means because every time it could be something different. Mm. So we are so fortunate to have both of your expertise in on this conversation because it is going to be beyond powerful for not only bariatric people, but just any human who struggles with cravings. Mm-hmm. Which is every human. So before we dive in, I would love to give you ladies the floor to kind of introduce yourselves just quickly before we dive into this conversation. So Laura, let's start with you, and then Jana, you can follow.
Yeah, so good to be here. My name is Laura Grabo, and I am a professional mental health therapist here in Grand Rapids, Michigan. I have been a therapist now for 24 years, and the last 18 specializing, working specifically with bariatric patients, providing them what I call the missing piece to their treatment plan, which is head work.
And we can all agree that that is the biggest piece that is absolutely missing. Expert in your field, thank you for joining us. Miss Jana?
Yes, my name is Jana Wolf, and I'm a registered dietitian. I work mainly in bariatrics and in weight management in general. I am also the proud owner of BariBox, the first bariatric meal delivery service in the nation, and we do deliver nationwide. I also have worked with Laura several times in the bariatric community, which has been a thrill. So I'm so excited to be here today with all of you guys together. And I have been in the field in bariatrics for almost 6 years, but in health and wellness for about 13 years. And I struggled with my own weight management growing up. I saw my first dietitian when I was in seventh grade. So all of this, especially the headwork piece of it and the emotional piece really, you know, hits a special place with me because it's not something that just goes away. You have to work on it consistently through your life.
And mm-hmm. If you guys have not tried a BariBox meal, highly recommend. It has changed my life. They're amazing. Go check out the website. And I will also let you guys know too, if you're watching this on YouTube, our Instagram handles are our name. So if you'd like to follow us, that is where you can go to learn about these amazing women and what they offer. And I will not continue until Miss Natalie has an opportunity to introduce herself to all of you.
Hello, I'm Natalie. I work with East to West. We are an amazing team. I'm behind all of the socials, getting all of that planned. Usually I'm behind messages, although Jason does take over most of the time in the mornings for the East Coast crew. But yeah, I am on my own bariatric journey. I've lost 140 pounds, and I just continue to, yeah, thank you. I continue to, you know, keep working towards my own, you know, goals. And I've struggled with eating disorders my whole life. And so I'm really excited for this conversation and hear these two perspectives in one conversation.
For sure.
Super powerful. We have all struggled with cravings, regardless of bariatric surgery or not bariatric surgery. And as I kind of said earlier, it's our job as patients to become our own scientists and decipher what these cravings mean. So today's conversation is really going to center around kind of three big questions. What are cravings and why do we have them? What do we do when they strike? And then can cravings be avoided? Those are kind of our big topics. So I think we just get right into it. You guys ready to dive in?
Ready.
Let's do it.
All right. So our very first question here is cravings. What are they and why do we have them? And I think first, I would like Jason, Natalie, myself to kind of briefly describe when and where we have noticed cravings after a bariatric surgery. And then Jana, we'd love for you to give us your definition from a nutritional perspective. And then Laura, your definition from the head work perspective, from that awesome. Emotional mental perspective. All right. Jason, why don't you start us off? Cravings after weight loss surgery.
I did real well for probably the first, I would say 6 months. I didn't really have any problems with it. But then after that, when hunger and everything started kind of creeping back in and I could eat normal and really kind of started feeling back toward, you know, to myself again, I work from home. So mid morning is always hard. Always start getting real snackish around mid morning. And then if I do lunch shortly after that, then I'm good for the rest of the day. Then of course, round about this time. So luckily I'm in here with you guys, so I can't do anything about it. So that's going to be fantastic for right now. But it's usually around this time of night, it gets pretty bad because you already had dinner, everything settled down a little bit. And then you're watching TV or whatever. You start thinking like, hey, I could really kind of snag a little because dinner's kind of settling out and you're kind of starting to feel like you could do a little something. It's not quite ready for bed yet. So then it really starts hitting you kind of hard. So those are the two worst times for me.
Right. And I really was hoping that after bariatric surgery, those little voices in the back of my head that was telling me, ooh, you know what sounds really good right now, would go away. And they have not. And I'm 2 years post-op. Yeah. Miss Nat, what about you?
I think for me, it's nighttime watching TV, like that mindless time that we all know and love at the end of our days. And then a lot of times it does happen to me around big holidays, big family holidays, like knowing, oh, Thanksgiving's coming up. I'm going to get so-and-so's dish that I haven't had in a year. And then you start kind of thinking about, oh, what would scratch that itch today? You know, those kinds of thoughts come into play, especially around the holidays for me, not just in the wintertime, but 4th of July, Easter, like my family always did huge holiday gatherings. And so pretty much any big holiday that comes up or any calendar holiday, really, I am like, oh, this kind of sounds good. So those seasonal, for lack of better terms, cravings do come in.
Yes. Well, and right with the holidays comes a lot of big emotions. And we know that a lot of us are drawn. We notice cravings are stronger when those big emotions come up. I know for me, when I get stressed, when I get angry, that is normally my very first reaction is, oh, I really want Cheetos. That tends to be my go-to, right? So the craving game is still very strong in me and I'm 2 years out. So Jana, will you break it down for us? What is a craving from like a nutritional standpoint?
Right. Yeah. So from a nutritional standpoint, it's usually that our body can be missing something. And right before we even started recording, this was the first thing that came up. Could it be maybe a nutrient, like a macronutrient, whether you're low in your diet in protein or carbohydrates, or maybe even fats? Could it be that you're low in certain micronutrients? Like there's a theory that if you're low in magnesium, you can crave sugary stuff or like chocolate. So are you taking your vitamins and minerals? Are you crossing pathways in your brain with the fact that you're slightly dehydrated? You know, could you go for a little bit more fluid, even if you've hit your 64 or 50 ounces to 64 ounces recommended by the ASMBS? Could you have a little bit more? Maybe you need that today. And then also all of you mentioned all of these things being paired with our emotional past and our reward centers in our brains. You know, when we eat certain foods, like especially the beautiful trifecta of like sugar, fat, and sugar, fat, and salt, it really makes us promote a lot of dopamine, endorphins in our brain, almost like we've done a workout. So we get a reward from that. So even subconsciously, if you have foods in your house, so you haven't set up, let's say you haven't set up your environment correctly, and you know that those foods are in your house, and then you're having like one of those moments, April, that you just mentioned, oh, I'm stressed, I'm annoyed, or oh, I want to celebrate, or oh, you know, Jason, it's nighttime, or Natalie, it's the holidays. All of those things are like connected to something in your brain. And in order to pump your brain up with nice little chemicals, yeah, you can get that from food. And we know that subconsciously, that might not even be a conscious decision. So I always talk to patients about not keeping certain trigger foods, whatever you want to call them, foods that, you know, if you're in a stressful place, those are easy, quick, legal, you know, like they're cheap and right. So that's, those are the types of foods that you can take out of your house or have limited quantities of, and maybe they're even like stored in the freezer or something.
So, I mean, really, it sounds like there's a lot of different things that can trigger this craving.
Yeah.
It doesn't even necessarily have to, I mean, just the fact that you know that something is in your house could be enough of a trigger to just say, oh, my brain is requiring that hit of dopamine, even though I'm not nutritionally deficient. I just know that it's here and I need that boost.
I mean, April, you start producing enzymes in your mouth. You start salivating when you think of food. And like you said, you know, that we didn't do surgery on our brains. It happened just straight in our stomach. So that's about it, you know, our GI. Everything else we have to learn through. I mean, I'm going to throw this back now over to Laura, because then speaking with a therapist or learning more from education, like, I talk to a lot of patients who don't think that they have any issues with food, and they might not, but at a certain point, there's got to be something underlying that can be addressed to sort of prevent cravings in the future. Yes, everyone has cravings. So how can we prevent them? And what if we give into them? Okay, move on. We'll talk about that, but you know.
Natalie opened my eyes to a new way of thinking, which we will get to, and how she has really learned to approach her cravings and how she shared it with our community, I think is so monumental, so monumental, because it really is, again, every situation that we encounter with a craving almost requires a fresh set of eyes. You have to approach every single one as something different because that craving is happening for a different reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Laura, will you offer the headpiece for us?
Well, I think you've all touched on it a little bit already, but craving just by definition is a powerful desire for something. And in light of our conversation, we're gonna say it's a powerful desire for food. And the key word I wanna point out in that definition is powerful. When I am working with my patients, they say it is strong. And they describe it exactly like you did, April, when you said, I wish this voice in my head would go away. Okay, so right here, had surgery on our stomachs, not our heads, right? And so it's this strong desire. And when I hear word craving, it's usually about one food. I am craving, you said Cheetos, right? I am craving fill in the blank. I can't get Snickers out of my mind. I can't get potato chips out of my mind. We do not, this is a good, you know, how do your listeners identify craving? Usually by one food. And it's usually, as Jana pointed out, the trifecta of it has sugar, fat, and salt in it. Okay. Because what it does to the brain, it gives us a nice little party, in the brain. And from, what I know then about craving is it's not physical hunger, that you do have to dig deeper and say, you know, go a little bit and say, okay, well then what am I really hungering after? What is going on right now? And I think it's a play of a lot of things. I think there's physical things going on. I think there's emotional things. I think there's mental things. I just want to speak a little bit to that party in the brain that Jana alluded to. This has been one of my biggest areas of research and learning since I started working in weight management is what is going on in the brain, right? And what, you know, we get this dopamine surge in our frontal lobe and this, you know, this party in our brain. And actually people with the obesity genetics get more of a party. They get more of a light up. That's what the research is showing. And what's very fascinating to me is even thinking about the foods. If we PET scanned our brains when we were thinking about those favorite Thanksgiving foods, or we PET scanned your brain when you were thinking about Cheetos, April, you start getting that push, right? So there's that powerful, there's something physical going on that's saying, go get me, go get me, go get me. And then once you eat, it starts a really strong physical process. So cravings, physical, emotional, mental, all the above.
That's why the willpower side of things is so misleading, because people just think in their head, it's just a craving. It's fine. Like, they don't realize that there's an actual chemical release going on that's way more powerful than just a thought process of going, buy a bag of Cheetos would be pretty cool right now. But instead, it's really your brain being like, oh, no, we're getting some Cheetos. Like, you're going to get in the car, you're going to go to the store, you're going to get the Cheetos, and we're going to eat them. It's going to be great. And literally, it's that push that drives people to really push until they get what they're craving after.
And the food industry has built their model on that push,
mm-hmm.
right?
Oh yeah.
The food industry has worked really hard. And again, I want to point out, all humans have cravings. It's not just bariatric patients. The food industry has worked very hard to get us hooked.
Yeah, especially during Thanksgiving and Halloween and all of the different holidays. I mean, basically October through January, you know, that's it. Well,
And I feel like once you get on that craving roller coaster, it's very hard to get off, because it's like, oh, I have a craving. Oh my God, I can't stop thinking about it. This is exhausting. I'm just going to eat it. And then I numb out, I zone out. And then when I come out of that, I feel so ashamed. Kicks off my shame mm-hmm. cycle. I'm a horrible person. Oh my God, what makes me feel better when I feel like a horrible person eating? You just get on this hamster wheel and you cannot get off. It is very difficult to get off. And Natalie, you literally changed my life. A conversation that we had when you talked about, like, well, scratching the itch, right? And some days I just have to scratch it with what it is. And then other days mm-hmm. I have different choices, but every day is different. So will you kind of mm-hmm. share with us your learning around this?
Yeah. So, I mean, I have been a food addict since I came out of, like, since I was born, I was a food mm-hmm. addict. My brain was just built that way. So I've dealt with that my whole life. And I actually come from a family of addicts, whether it's drugs, alcohol, gambling, whatever, you name it. And so I've kind of grown up around these, picking up lingos and picking up different tools in recovery just from living my life. And one thing that my mom and I had discussed before is that with food, we can't escape food. Like, we have to eat, we have to be able to, like, nourish our bodies. And sometimes nourishing our bodies is going to look like scratching the itch. But sometimes I can personally, like, make something a little bit different. Like, I think we've talked about pumpkin spice lattes, right? One of my favorite seasonal indulgences. Some days I can get away with sugar-free pumpkin creamer with my coffee, adding some protein to it, and that'll satisfy the itch. But sometimes, like, I just want the pumpkin spice latte, or else I'm not going to stop thinking about it. And then I'm going to have the biggest pumpkin spice latte with a pumpkin scone with, like, and I'm going to binge on it because I didn't allow myself to have the small version of the real thing. And that's something that has helped me in my recovery with food addiction, is, like, some days I can talk myself through it and say, nah, I don't really need it. Actually, I can, like, move on. Some days I'll be like, oh, I still kind of want it, but I'm going to make it fit my goals. And then other days it's like, no, nothing else will do. I'm just going to get the real deal. I'm going to get a small thing and I'm going to enjoy it and then move on.
And what is so difficult about bariatric patients is that for so long we have not trusted our instincts. We don't trust ourselves. And then we get to this point where, like, oh, wait a minute. I have some capacity to think about this differently. I can access my willpower, right? I all of a sudden I have these different tools at my disposal. Do I trust myself to make the right decision in the moment when they present themselves? it's a real struggle because we're just not used to doing that.
I love the idea that you have a backup plan. So if you want, you know that you can have the pumpkin spice sugar-free latte all the time. Like that's just something that you can have. You know that the regular one is for a special occasion when you just can't, you know, when you have to scratch the itch. And then you also know that like after you have that, if you just balance that out for the rest of the day and in general, you're nourishing yourself on a regular basis, you're getting your protein and you're getting your vitamins and you're getting your fluids and all of those basic principles, then you likely won't have another craving for a very long time. And then, you know, I always talk about how often and how much, because if you're having that, if that does turn into a spiral, let's say you trusted yourself fully and then all of a sudden you're like, wait, I'm starting to get this every day, every couple of days. Then you realize, okay, let me take a step back. Let me just have the sugar-free one. Let me just have it. It's not going to be the end of the world if I don't have the real thing. It's going to be fine. And then rewiring your brain to get back used to the old habit of having that more often, because really all we're doing is just making like constantly, and Laura, I'm stepping onto your turf, but this like constant rewiring of the pathways and making these new pathways to say, oh, this is actually good. This is actually good. I like this. I like how I feel when I drink this. I feel better in general. And you know that like a 250 calorie drink is not going to break the bank if the rest of the day is balanced, especially let's say, oh, here's another thing. If you're feeling a little bit out of control, sometimes that happens. You have boundaries that you can set on yourself, like just even for one day tracking food, you know? You could just track your food for one day in Barrytastic or MyFitnessPal. You don't have to do it for the rest of your life. Just one day to get you back centered.
Well, and I've been doing that recently. And ever since, I've been tracking one meal a day. And that has opened my eyes to the reality of how I was eating. And when I did that for a month, I lost 8 pounds.
Ah.
Because I can trust myself to look at rational data now and go, this is not working out well. I'm eating way too much. You know, right. And the other thing that has really changed in Laura and my personal therapist, Wendy, have really ingrained in me is that when I'm right there, there's at East West, we kind of say there's three choices. You can pass on the item, you can find the alternative, or you can enjoy. Those are your three big choices. And we have the capacity to make that choice that's best for us. But every single choice I can't make until I answer the question, why am I making this choice? Right. Because if I'm not doing that head work, like Laura, I always hear Laura in the back of my brain going, why are you doing that? Right. And it doesn't matter what the choice is, because the power of that question is I'm walking myself through the reality of this. And I can say, I'm choosing to have a regular old pumpkin spice latte today because nothing else will do. Or I'm very much looking forward to that flavor or whatever it is. And I'm going to have the tall and that will be it. And I'm very excited for that. And then I'm going to move on to something else. But I have to ask myself that why question, right, Laura?
Absolutely. Because, you know, we're kind of moving into like, what do we do when this craving presents itself? I think there's a step that we have to do before that and be curious and ask ourselves what's really going on here. You know, am I physically hungry? I heard a lot of mental triggers. I didn't hear physical hunger triggers for craving. I hear nighttime eating. That's been a habit for many, many humans. We eat at nighttime when we sit down and relax. I heard holidays, positive memories of food. You know, we're not hearing anything about being physically hungry. As my patients describe craving for me, and as they engage and use the word scratching the itch or not, they'll often say, well, you know, I thought I was craving this. And so I ate it and that didn't do it for me. And then I went to eat that and that didn't do it for me. And it's often sweet, salt, sweet, put them together. And it's because none of it's going to do it for you because you're not physically hungry. You're emotionally hungry. Craving is about emotional hunger. And you need to slow down and say, what's going on right now? Like, let me be curious.
April, oh my God.
I love that.
Well, I mean, literally it just connected to my head because we always say like every craving is a lie. And it's true. You are not craving food necessarily, right? Like you, it is telling you something is missing. And if it's, if you're not like, oh, I need broccoli, right? Your brain's not going, oh, I need broccoli. No, no, no. Your brain's going, I need this one specific thing. And then like what you said, like, duh, if I eat something and I'm like, oh, that didn't do it. Yeah. It's not the food that's ever going to do it.
Yeah.
Like ding, ding, ding.
Yeah. And often it's a need. So, I think it was you, April, who just said, you know, it's when I'm angry or when I'm stressed. It's when, you know, we have to start asking ourselves, I want all of your listeners and those watching to think about in their lives, when are cravings more intense? When they look back in their life, what was going on in their life? And usually it's a time of stress, right? It's a time of stress. It's a time of needing comfort. It's a time of feeling angry. It's a time of feeling lonely, anxious. We've all just gone through that in light of global pandemic, right? And these emotions are just emotions. They're not good or bad. They're not positive or negative. They're either comfortable or uncomfortable. And our cravings, like I'll have clients come to therapy and go to me, I don't know why on earth I had so many cravings this week. Like I've been doing so good. And I said, well, tell me about your week. And I hear about parenting stress, job stress, financial stress. Stress is at an all-time high. And I said, yeah, that's probably why your cravings were up. You had more uncomfortable emotions this week that needed to be honored in non-food ways. But for many, many years before bariatric surgery, you took care of those emotions with numbing them with food that would numb. And it's time for a better way. That's why you had the surgery.
We were just talking about this earlier. We get to this point in our recovery and we think, oh, the surgery did it all. And then we get past the honeymoon stage and we go, oh, no, 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 no. I do not want to do this. Nope, 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 nope. But this is the work.
This is the
that's
work.
This was exactly what I was going to say, because I work with so many patients before surgery as well. And, you know, a lot of the work that we do is almost like pretending that you've already had the surgery, dealing with emotions, you know, when you're stressed, et cetera, et cetera. But I think that there's this thing that happens during the honeymoon phase. It's that the honeymoon phase is part of the lie. You know, we mourn that honeymoon phase like, oh, it'll be like this forever. That's why the tool of the surgery is so amazing. But there would be no reason for us to call it the honeymoon phase if it didn't do those things, you know? So I feel as though we mourn the honeymoon phase to a point where it's like, God, now that you didn't practice it for the first like 6 to 12 months, however long your honeymoon phase happened for, you're still relying on the surgery. And now you have to get back to what Laura said, working up here and putting the work in and understanding, you know, if you have a cut that's bleeding out, you don't eat, you put a Band-Aid on it. Like naming the feeling and actually dealing with it is something that's really hard to do. Mm-hmm. It's uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And,
well, and I'm gonna put a,
you might not have to do it during the honeymoon phase.
Well, and a clarifier on that is for many of us, it's not that we're getting back to the head work. It's that we have never done the head work. And now all of a sudden, not only are we being asked to understand how to live our lives thinner and as a bariatric patient, but now you're telling me I have to do this crazy, ridiculous head work that I've actually been avoiding for my entire life.
Yeah.
Right. We've been masking it with the food, with all the other anything we can do but that. And, you know, we talk about this often, the honeymoon phase, you know, we're told of the honeymoon phase while we're in the honeymoon phase, but nobody ever speaks of the fact that the honeymoon, not like we think that the honeymoon phase is just going to kind of fade out and then we'll find something new to like figure out on the way. Nobody tells us they rip the rug out from under us when the honeymoon phase happens and we just get pushed down like, and it's over. Like, so while you're trying to figure out why you're on the ground and get your way back up, then you start getting beat by all your other thoughts and things and feelings that you weren't, you know, that you were always able to mask. And then you just get kind of this blanket of stuff thrown on you and you're just like, you fight your way back up. But it's just, it's hard in a way that, you know, like you guys were talking about with the pandemic and everything that's been going on this past year, the stressors were at an all-time high. But now it's almost just as stressful trying to find a way out of what we've been doing the past year and find some sense of normalcy. Yeah. in the world, whether it be going back to work, which is stressful as hell for a lot of people because they've only been bariatric patients at home working and don't know what it's going to be like in the real world. And they get back to work and it's potlucks and donuts and coffee and this and all the things that they haven't even had access to. And here they are, freshly out of, like in all the shows, they're the newly bitten vampires that don't know how to control themselves, and they're looking around like, like everything's a trigger, and they just don't know how to do it. And so they're like, with all this power, like, I have access to all the things. So it's hard for them to figure out how to scale it back. So yeah, there's so many things that are happening for so many people at the same exact time that this honeymoon phase is crashing down. So it stands to reason why there's so much, you know, panic and just unsurety and people being so afraid that they're going to fail.
And I don't think the bariatric treatment centers where our patients have had their surgery has prepared them for the mindset piece of their treatment plan.
Absolutely not.
I have been, you know, working with a bariatric group now for 18 years that has a strong behavioral health component. There's four of me in that program. I mean, I have since left, but I still work with them. And I just assumed every bariatric program had that. And this is why I love your community, East to West, because sometimes there could be someone listening today who's never even heard of the mindset work, who's never even heard of the head work. A lot of information on nutrition, a lot of information on exercise, but nobody told them, you know, that's the question, you know, exercise, nutrition, having the tool of bariatric surgery. That's the how am I going to get healthier? How am I going to lose weight? But you also have to answer why you eat, which is this topic today, craving.
Oh, yeah. No, you'd be shocked at how many people we talk to that get a list from their surgery center that's literally one page that has 3 to 6 months, 6 to 9 months, to, you know, 9 to 12 months. And it just has calorie goals like 800, 1200, 1500, 2000. That's it. They're just like, hit these calorie goals. And it's like, well, I don't know about you guys, but I've been big forever and I know how to eat 2000 calories, but it's not going to be the way you want me to get 2000 calories. They're not going to line up. I promise you, they will not. So I'm going to need something a little more than just a number to go off of, because past that, I don't really know what to do or how to get there. But you got, you know, once the check's cashed and they're done with you, they're just like, all right, man, take it easy. Like, we'll see you for a couple of follow-ups. But past that, once the honeymoon's over, you don't have any more follow-ups. Like, my surgery center's not, I'm 18 months out. They're not trying to see me. Like, they don't want me to come in there and be like, hey, I need a follow-up appointment. They're going to be like, for what? Like, you're done. Like, no, we don't need to see you, dude.
And let's be clear, our surgical center's job is complete. They successfully operated on us.
Absolutely.
That's
a
small part of it, right? What we're talking about is actually the work of weight loss surgery, which is why these conversations are so critically important so that we can help others find long-term success.
And it is required for most surgical centers to have a requirement for patients to follow up every single year.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because the retention rate of follow-up goes down so much year after year. And I think part of that, I don't think I know because I've talked to people, part of that is embarrassment and shame about weight regain, about cravings, about things that you didn't realize could happen to you.
Right.
You know? So, I mean, we're talking on a very you know, daily level and minute to minute level, because these things happen on a regular basis. But long-term, you know, it's to be expected that your brain will continue to work the way it does. It's to be expected that there will be cravings, holidays, things like this, and that you will need more work. I think that what we don't do well enough beforehand is remind people that weight management, that word management, is for life. You know, it's like any other comorbidity. Like if you have type 2 diabetes and all of a sudden your blood sugars are great and you're managing it well, you don't just, that's not just it. You have to manage it forever. It's the same thing with your weight, because your body is consistently trying to work against you and protect you and do the thing that's most comfy cozy all the time.
Yeah, it's trying to get us back to how we were before surgery. And Nat's most famous line that is tattooed in my brain is if the new us doesn't show up, the old us will. And that's what we're talking about. Nat, I know that there was something you wanted to contribute.
Yeah, I guess I just wanted to go backtrack a little bit. Moment has moved on, but the fact that our surgery centers, they don't really prepare us for labeling our emotions. I feel like we've gone through like our entire journeys. When someone says, "How are you?" "Oh, I'm fine." "I don't know." "Eh, I don't know." "Whatever." Because we've never like had to deal with it. And it made me, I think it was something Laura said recently. I was talking with my therapist and I said, "Yeah, I don't know. I'm just like, I'm not feeling that great today. I've been really craving this very specific dish that my dad makes. And just to like sit down and eat this dish and like not do anything." And she was like, "Okay, so like, what are you feeling?" And I was like, "I don't know. I just don't feel good." And she was like, "Okay, so what are you feeling?" And she wouldn't stop. And I was like, "I don't know. Like, why are you asking? I don't know what I'm feeling." And she was like, "We'll just wait." And we literally sat for like 5 minutes while I tried to like put a label on what I was feeling. And I was feeling overwhelmed. We have a lot going on in my work life, my social life with East to West. I was like, I feel like I can't get my dishes done. I can't get my laundry done. I'm feeling overwhelmed. And she was like, "Yeah." And so when you lived with your parents, would he make that like on a tough day? And I was like, "Yeah," you know, and everything is connected in that way. And that was a very recent conversation. So it's funny that we're now talking about it here, but that is something that I never really realized until that moment. I never put a label or I never named what I was feeling. I never put a name to it.
Mm. Oh my God. Yeah. Nat, that is.
Oh, Nat, you are not alone, right? So that what the dots you are connecting are amazing. You are doing some incredible work with a wonderful therapist. What I have learned is many, many of our bariatric patients, the majority of them do not have a feeling vocabulary. And that's often the first step, right? So we're talking about how do we deal with cravings? Okay, we identify they're more about feelings than physical hunger, but I don't know how to name them. And how do I know what I don't know? And that's where we need to be able to start. You know, that's something that's actually one session that I do in my online course. And then I also do it in my individual therapy sessions, is helping people start to name their feelings, because you can't honor them. You can't meet them. You can't feed them, if you will, okay, in healthy ways, in non-food ways, until you can give them a name.
I really felt like in that moment, because I have a early childhood teaching background, I really felt like I was a kindergartner trying to point to the feelings map on, like, you know, what you have when you're in like kindergarten, you have the like little faces. That's how I felt in that moment, that I was like having to refigure out what I was feeling and putting an actual name to what I was feeling instead of just whatever, I don't know, and brushing it off.
Oh my God.
Or saying that you were hungry. I was hungry. Mm-hmm. No, you weren't. You were overwhelmed.
Right.
Oh my God.
I'm curious because this is something that I would ask in my nutrition session. Did you eat it? Did you do it?
No, because I would have if I could have afforded it.
I'm your honesty.
I don't know, for any Italians out there. He makes cioppino. Which is like a seafood stew. And it is like chock full of like all of the most expensive seafood that you can find. I probably would have if I like had the means to.
Mm-hmm. My next question would be, if you ate the cioppino, would it have taken care of that feeling of being overwhelmed?
No.
There it is.
Absolutely.
There it is.
You know, because my kitchen is still dirty.
Right, we're doing something right.
Yeah,
there it is.
It may have done it momentarily, right? Because remember we talked about what's going on with the brain, especially if we have a positive memory and it connected you to your father. And I'm sure there's fat and salt in that dish and maybe some sugar. but it would only be more momentarily, right? So,
right.
So to use your lingo, Nat, scratching the itch, our comfort foods, our cravings only scratch the itch momentarily, mm-hmm. right? And Jana and I are here to teach you, we want to teach you a different way, right? We want to teach you, how do I cope through the craving instead of numbing it? They're two very different things. And I will be honest, eating the Chipino, eating the Cheetos, a lot easier than what you had to do in your therapy session.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, a lot easier.
And that is why, it comes back to trust. We have to learn to trust ourselves, because some days we have the energy to do that work. And then those are the days that we do it. Some days we don't have the energy to do that work. But if we are far enough along in our journey, we can go, I need to do this work. I need to catalog this. I need to understand what is going on. And that's not something that I have the capacity to do in this moment. But it's on my brain now. And I will have the capacity to do that, which is kind of like the goal of this conversation. What do we do when cravings strike? Because we're always going to have them. So what are the steps that we need to take? And I'm assuming the first one is we have to understand, okay, is this a nutritional craving or is this an emotional craving, right? Mm-hmm. So is there a magic question that we need to ask, or is it just an observation that we know, like, oh, this is like, Jana, what would indicate that my craving is nutritional?
If it's nutritional, I mean, if it's like a drop in blood sugar, let's say, where you're actually physically hungry, then you need to know what your physical hunger feels like, because I can tell you the general symptoms of like, oh, you get the growling stomach, or you feel a little moody or hangry, or, you know, maybe you feel a little dizzy, or you get that feeling in your throat that, like, you know, the shaky. Yeah. And when you have that feeling will not go away. That will not go away. Even if you deny yourself, it will get worse and worse. And that's the whole thing of like, when I talk about skill power over willpower, Jason had mentioned willpower earlier, and we can't rely on willpower because it runs out like a battery. So if you have the skills to stock your fridge and to make sure that you have things on hand, that are always there for you when you need to have your, you know, your three meals. And if you're doing that to take the edge off of regular hunger, then, you know, that hunger is satisfied from here down, not from here up. So then, Laura, I mean, we can talk about, you know, the one thing that I talk about with patients is making space and time in between your craving and actually going for the food, reevaluating. I know that sometimes we don't do that because there's this like immediate, like, moment in time where you're like, no, I can't even think about the future. I can only think about right now and eating that thing. But one other thing I wanted to say is that I do always talk about how, like, if you do, go and have the food that you're craving, versus not having it, compare those two feelings afterwards. If you eat at night, and you go to sleep on a full stomach versus a semi-empty stomach, how do those two feelings compare? You know, do you get a better night's sleep? Do you get a better bowel movement the next day? You know, sorry, TMI, but these are the things that can come out of, you know, changing your dietary habits. And thinking back, did I really need it? Maybe not. Maybe I didn't need it. Maybe I got better sleep.
Well, it always comes back to these internal conversations that before we avoided or we just didn't have. And now, as a bariatric patient seeking to find that happy, healthy weight, right? This our forever life. These are the conversations that we have to have.
Ourselves. And not to mention the fact that given, like you guys were saying, given into the craving technically is still collecting the data needed to have the important conversation after the fact. Mm-hmm. So even if you give into it, it's not technically like you've just derailed everything, because you're still able to collect the data from that, you know, from giving into the craving, because not only can you track how you felt about it, you can track how it made you feel. You can track it, you know, like, you know, Jana said, some of the things the next day, well, you know, how you slept, what you feel like the next morning, you know, minus the guilt and the shame part of it, but literally as a fact-finding mission almost, if you do happen to, versus the time, because you're going to use that towards the next time you have the craving to possibly be able to not give in to the craving and just adjust and, you know, make a better decision for yourself.
Exactly. That involves less accusing and more curiosity.
Right.
Yes, I love that you said no guilt and shame. And April, I know you asked Jana about how do we know if it's a nutritional craving, a deficiency, what's going on. And that's why I'm so glad we're here together. And then I think the next question is naturally, well, then how do I know if it's more emotional or it's more head hunger? It's like Jana said, from up here. And I think I quickly teach that by saying it's tied to your senses. If you hear thoughts, so I love April, how you said, if you're hearing it up here, okay, this is a good warning sign. But if you hear like, ooh, that sounds so good, my ears. That looks good. That smells good. I have a taste for something sweet. These are often what
I like that
as warning signs that, you know what, that's probably not physical hunger. Okay. That's head hunger. That's emotional hunger. So then you slow down and you get curious and say, okay, what's really going on here? What do I need? It's not food.
Oh my God. I just drew the most simple graphic in the world, but it's so true, right? If you're feeling your hunger in your head, it's emotional. If you're feeling your hunger from the neck down, it's probably nutritional. Like,
That's it.
Thank you for coming to our TED Talk.
Right. I think there's something to be said for that, because I grew up, I never knew what hunger felt like. I never knew what it felt like to be physically hungry until I had my bariatric surgery, until, you know, my stomach was pretty healed, until I was, you know, 4 months out. And then all of a sudden I got the shakes. All of a sudden I felt moody and I was like, what is going on? Oh yeah, that's hunger. That means that you're hungry. And that to actually feel it in my body instead of my head, like you said, Laura, I mean, that's the way that you just put that really sealed the deal. That really helped me.
And another little tip, and I think Jana would agree, if your craving is about physical hunger and you scratch the itch, you give it what it needs, you're going to be satisfied, especially with your wonderful tool of bariatric surgery. If your craving is psychological and emotional and you give it food, it's going to persist despite eating, which brings us back to, well, that didn't do it for me. And that didn't do it for me.
Yeah. Mm. Well, one of the crazy things, like what you were saying, is it's the senses, because before I had surgery, any point in time, if you asked me if I was hungry and what I wanted, I could tell you, I could nail down a place like that. Like I would always be like, ooh, we can eat and we can go here, or I want this or I want that. Post-op, I can't tell you how many times that, you know, my wife would be like, hey, are you hungry? What do you, I haven't really thought anything, whatever we get is fine. And that is one of the things that I've noticed when you said that, it made me think about it. I'm like, when I'm hungry, like, I'm like, whatever, like put whatever in front of me, I'll eat half of it. It's cool. Before I would be like, it's this, it's gotta be this. It's gotta be this high. It's gotta be this many patties. It's gotta be this many fries of this kind with this kind of sauce. And I could nail it down to you damn near how to make it. And then now, yeah. But after the fact, I'm like, I don't care, whatever, slide whatever in front of me. And I'm going to get after part of it. And then the rest of it's going to go in a box.
You're making me think of that classic thing of like, if you know, when kids are like, oh, I want something. And then the mom gives them an apple and then they say, well, I don't want the apple. And it's like, well, you're not hungry.
Yeah. Exactly.
I love it.
I just have to say, I mean, Jan and Laura, you women are brilliant, but I need to slow clap Jason, Natalie, and myself. We are doing some bariatric learning here. I mean, damn, friends. God, this is hard, but hot damn, is it worth it? Oh my God.
Every day.
Right. I love talking to you guys.
Yes.
I mean, this is where the magic happens. This is where the growth happens, right? Mm-hmm. And that's why these conversations are necessary and needed in our community, because so few people have the opportunity to have them. So if they can at least listen and watch, it will make the difference. So before we let you ladies go, the last question that we really want to know is, can our cravings be avoided? Is there anything that we can do to maybe lessen the chance or make them not so strong? Is that possible? Jana?
Nutritionally, I'll make it quick and simple. It's meeting those very basic needs, the bariatric basics. And we all know them. Getting your protein in, I usually recommend 70 to 100. It's a slightly bit more. Getting your fluids in, you know, and making them mostly water if you can, and getting your vitamins in. And at least that'll take the edge off, you know, if you're wanting to avoid physical, real hunger and hanger. Yes, do those three things and you can avoid at least some of the cravings. But I'm going to throw this back over to Laura because, yeah, Laura, take it away.
All humans have cravings. And I don't think they can ever completely be avoided. I want to get that out there. But I do think we can decrease them and we can decrease their power. What we have learned in today, we've been talking a lot about what to do after the craving hits, how to identify it, how to meet it. I call those reactive skills, skill power, to use Jana's word, okay? Mm. We can do some things proactively. How are we taking care of ourselves? Okay, we see cravings are related to our physical needs, our emotional needs, and our mental needs. Are we putting our own oxygen mask on in all those areas? Are we taking care of our physical needs? Are we taking care of our emotional needs? Are we taking care of our mental needs? If you are doing that in healthy ways, I believe when the stress increases, the craving's not going to be as strong because you have been you've been ready. You've been putting on the armor. You've been putting on the shields to hit that in a healthy, healthy way.
This will be one of the few episodes that I watch and listen to over and over and over again, because there is so much information here that really will impact us at that minute level. I mean, it's just, wow. Wow. Laura and Jana, we can't thank you enough for joining us. We always love to give our guests kind of the floor as we wrap up our podcast episode. So is there any little nugget that you think left unsaid? Is there any piece of advice or wisdom that you'd like to pass along to anybody that's struggling with cravings? Laura, we can start with you.
I think my biggest nugget is always don't beat yourself up. Don't beat yourself up. Have grace and space for yourself. You're learning, you're baby stepping this. Cravings didn't automatically leave you in the operating room, and celebrate the win that you are listening to this podcast and you're learning a new way.
Truth, Fred, truth. Miss Jetta?
I love that, Laura. And I'm going to piggyback on what you said and say that a lot of these things that happen, with cravings and, you know, overeating or whatever it might be, you can always reflect on it while giving yourself grace and get the data out of it and ask yourself, instead of being accusatory, be curious and get something at least out of that situation. And don't rely on, you know, the tool of the surgery. Do the work yourself. It's 50-50, you and the surgery. And setting yourself up for success, 9 times out of 10 will work. You know, if you stock your fridge and you stock your freezer and, you know, you've prepared some meals, sometimes it is easier to just eat those things. And if you've stocked your pantry with Oreos and all of the, you know, Halloween stuff and whatnot, you're more likely to eat those. So whatever's in your environment usually determines, you know, what you're going to consume.
Normally we don't do this, but I want to give Natalie and Jason just a brief moment to reflect on what was your big aha moment from this conversation. I know I have mine. I can share mine first. And it's this freaking little stickman graphic that I drew. Oh my God, I'm making that official. And we are blessing that to everyone on the planet that we know. That was a huge takeaway for me. Jason, what about you?
Mine was the sensory situation. Like, it's got to be the auditory, the visual. Like, if it sounds good, you know, think about it. You know, to me, that was, because I mean, I've said all of those things. And everybody knows my issue with Cheez-Its and how bad that went. That went for so long that literally I thought about it while we were talking about it, and I was going to bring it up earlier, but I literally, after I fell off the wagon and went so hard at it, I was buying family boxes of Cheez-Its and I was hiding them in my drawer behind me in this hutch that we had while I was working. And I would pull them out and I would eat, you know, bowls of them at a time until they were gone. But I was figuring out I was going through family boxes every 2 days. Well, family boxes were big ass boxes, so I was plowing through. Well, I realized that when I had my grandbabies here for about a year with me, and I realized that my youngest granddaughter would hear me every time I would open that door, and she would come running, and she knew that it was Cheez-It time, so she would have her hand out. I realized when I started getting mad about having to share a family-sized box of Cheez-Its with a two-year-old that it was a bigger issue. First off, it was bad enough I was hiding them. Second off, it was bad enough I was upset about sharing them with a child. So then I realized that I had to really go deep off into it, and I just cut it completely out. And now, I mean, it's been months since I've even thought about it. I don't even go anywhere near that section of the store now because I know better. Because I'll buy them. I know I will. So that's why I don't even, like, if I go in the store, like, they're only sold in Aldi, though. The ones that I like are only sold in Aldi because the actual Cheez-Its are too salty, so I can't eat them. These are the bootleg baked. The baked ones that Aldi sells. So if they're in the back corner of the store and the protein bars I buy are in the front, like right in the front. So literally I make a U-turn. I go in, I grab the bars, I turn around and go to the counter. I buy them and get the hell out because I know if I go any farther than that, I'm going to grab boxes and it's bad. So to me, that makes all the sense in the world. So,
yep, you're collecting that data. Miss Nat, what about you?
I think mine's very similar to Jason's. I think it's the defining, you know, is this head hunger? Am I putting like senses to the hunger, or is it a physical feeling that's below my neck? You know, feeling the pit in my stomach or the shaking or something like that, differentiating the two and having that that check-in with myself when I'm feeling that hunger.
You know, and this, I get to give a little teaser because this is just perfect. We have been working on something big for our community. And if you are interested in really diving into these topics at a deeper level, you are going to like what we have coming up. We can't say what. We can say that it's coming very soon, November 4th, to be exact. Miss Laura and Miss Jana might be in on what we have been working on, but if you would like to know more, get on our email list, go to www.easttowestws.com and get signed up so that you are the first to know. That's the only little bit that I'm going to say, but I just had to get it in there because it's so perfect. This is why we have been working so hard, is because these deep dives are necessary and needed. So before we let you ladies go, will you please let people know where they can find and follow you? Laura, will you let them start with you?
Instagram is just at Laura Grabo, and I spell my name L-O-R-A. And you can follow me on Facebook as well, Laura Grabo, Headwork for Healthy Weight Loss.
Oh, Miss Deanna?
Or LauraGrabo.com. I do have a website.
Oh, yeah. You can follow me at my Barry Box on Instagram, barrybox.org, to place orders for meal delivery before and after surgery. And I'm also on Facebook. I have a page called Barry Box and Jana Wolf RD.
Two resources I highly recommend that you take advantage of in our community. These women are amazing and they are here to support us. Ladies, thank you so much for joining us today. We very much appreciate your time.
Thank you for having us.
Miss Nat, would you like to tell people about a wonderful opportunity that they could participate in every Sunday?
Yes. So if you've been following us for a while, we do have a segment every single Sunday called Shout Out Sundays. This is a chance for us at East to West to give back to you guys and shout out you and your stories and highlight different members in our community. All you have to do is go to our website, easttowestwls.com. Fill out that Sunday shout out submission form. You'll upload a picture that you're proud of sharing with our nation, with our community. And then I will post it. You don't have to be a patron. You don't have to pay us. You don't donate anything. It's literally just signing up and I will get you guys on our grid and I get to talk and brag about you guys on our stories. So yeah, go ahead and go to the website and fill out that form. And it's one of my favorite days of the week. And I know it's Jason and April's as well.
best part of starting the week off is on Sunday with our shout out Sundays. Mm-hmm. Jason, my friend, will you take us out?
Yes, ma'am. Ladies, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it. All your just your valuable time is appreciated, and your knowledge as well. So we can't thank you enough. Thank you to everyone who has liked, shared, subscribed, followed, spread the word about East to West. We appreciate you helping us to reach as many ears as possible, because this journey is nothing without support. So please just continue to do so. You can rate the podcast on your favorite podcast player. You can leave us reviews also on our YouTube page. You can do the same, rate and share there as well. You can leave us voice messages on our Anchor page that we can then incorporate into later episodes of the podcast, which is also awesome. Another way for us to shout you out and support you. So please continue to do all of those things, as well as like and share and subscribe. And just remember, at the end of the day, you've got this, we've got you, and we'll see you next time.